The BBC Educational Service is as happy as a eunuch's tailor to present Hudwinks with Roy, alas, poor Lord Hume, I knew him, Hud, and an assorted mélange of thespians who'll do anything to get into doublets and tights. This week...
Henry the V. Nearly the last of the Plantagenets.
To paint a scenario of 15th century England, one must first dispel any misconceived images of a green and pleasant land inhabited by mirthful, apple-cheeked country folk gambling about saying things like fal-de-rol and hey, nolly, no. In those days, buckle shoes, a powdered wig, and a little lipstick were enough to get your message across. Though England was a harsh and cold purgatory where only the fittest survived and the weak had their electric cut off. Hunger, violence, and destitution prevailed in this England of 1430. Bloody sustained wars against the French had well nigh exhausted England's coffers. And how the men could fight and smoke woodbines at the same time is still a mystery. Yet, regardless of all this, a new spirit of renaissance was in the air. A new king had been crowned. A ruler pledged to end all wars, scourge the land of poverty, and get inflation down into three figures. We've all heard that one before, haven't we? Our chronicle begins at the coronation dinner dance of Henry V.
My Lord Archbishop.
Sir Percy?
Fal-de-rol.
Hey, nonny, nonny, no.
You are? Good. Let's sit this one out and go on the terrace. There's a lovely room.
Oh, have you been? Thank you.
The Earl of Shrewsbury and his niece, Samantha of Cleavage. And if she's his niece, I'm a Chinaman. Know what I mean, John?
Ah! My loyal and trusted friend Salisbury. Lovely handbag. Welcome, welcome.
Sir, my sword and my standard are thine.
Thy sword whilst I covet, I've read the standard, thanks all the same. And who is this charming little hot water bottle?
Sire, permit me to introduce my niece.
Your esteemed honor.
No, my dear. The king is an esteemed sire.
Purely newspaper speculation, my little brace of watermelons.
A curtsy for the king, Samantha.
Oh, yes.
She is anon to become a debutante at court, sire.
How old are you, my dear?
17, sire. I'll be coming out next week.
If you curtsy any lower, etc., etc. Aha! What a devilishly sharp audience I perceive in the orchestras there.
Yes, my liege is in his cups this night.
Aye, and before it's over, I deign to be in Samantha's as well, but... Come, Salisbury, join me in victuals. My table groans with magpie stew, sheep's brains, and goat's offal. Though first is my sorry duty to witness an execution.
Who are you executing?
The caterers, of course. Damn J&S Foods, the incompetent idiots.
The Dukes of Essex, Wessex, and Sussex. These teeth are going back tomorrow. And the Dukes of Hazard. Sorry, lads, no jeans tonight. Sorry, you can't know. Sorry.
The banquet bubbled on, and the king wallowed pleasurably amidst merry ditty and ribald guffaw. Yes, Mary and ribald were two very big girls indeed. They laughed heartily as he entertained all with his brilliant repertoire of anecdotes.
Sire.
Then, to have it all, I got caught in a huge traffic jam on Britt Eklund's bedroom staircase. Yes, I'll not forget those happy days I spent in the boys' brigade.
Oh, methinks my liege is a proper scamp and no distrust. Pass the port and lemon, Dorothy.
Yes, even as the king sat tickling his subjects. Little did he know that treachery was abroad. Well, not quite abroad, but in a lonely tavern near Dover.
Osler?
Come in, sire. Welcome, sire, welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Osler, thank you. Osler, take these coconut shells and bed them down for the night.
At once, sire.
Good evening to you, sir.
Landlord. Landlord, a Madeira to invigorate Mindy Blocks.
I regret, sire, it is Madeira's night off. Stuart Granger, 1949.
Landlord, I'm looking for a man.
It'd be Gregory's night off too, sir.
Did somebody call me?
Get back down that cellar, you waggish whoopsie. Now, sire. I think the man you be a-looking for is a-sitting in that booth over yonder.
Where?
He's a-coming out now, sire. Thank heaven.
Thank you, landlord. Here's a shilling for your troubles.
It'll take more than a shilling to cure what I've got.
And as we speak, Mountjoy, the king's equerry journeys to France to talk peace with Louis the Dauphin, or even Louis the Dauphin, or even Louis the Dauphin. Anyway, he's French.
The equerry will never reach France, my dear Gloucester. I'll vouchsafe for that. Now, drink up.
If Henry wins peace, I am ruined. Every penny I have is in cannonballs. £50,000, that's a load of money.
Yes, and it's a load of ammunition. Now, drink up.
So you see, Mountjoy, it's imperative that the war with Louis continues.
Yes, it will, Gloucester. Now, drink up.
No more for me. I must hasten back to the banquet. If I tarry here, I may be missed.
Pardon?
Missed.
Oh, yes.
I said that was no lady, that was Tottenham striker. All right. It's cabaret time.
It'll be good.
Right, thanks very much, folks, and welcome to cabaret time here at the Tower of London. My name's Tarbuck, Jimmy Tarbuck, and let me tell you, it's the very first time I've worked for a very long time. Now then, perhaps you're all wondering what I'm doing here in the 15th century, eh? Well, I've got to get my jokes from somewhere, haven't I? No, be fair. Listen, tonight, we've got tumblers, jugglers, fire eaters, oh, and making his very first public appearance, a 4-year-old versatile entertainer called Max Bygraves. But before that, I've got to tell you, I played golf today with Pope Ferdinand and a few of you.
Before you choose your next record, Max, can you tell me how you first became a comedian?
Well, Michael, as a kid, I was brought up in the East End of London, and in those days, if you couldn't fight, you had to be funny. And that was the harsh rule.
So you...
Right, I was the best fighter in the East End.
My liege, gatecrashers are without. They say they know you.
Who are these intruders who invade my pleasure?
One calls himself Bull's Blood the Beast, the Eater of Children.
He's okay, let him in.
Another is Ivan the Turk, the genocidal rapist of Eastern Europe.
Yes, let him in.
And Mad Dog McGlinty, who dismembers his victims and throws their limbs to the wolves.
Fine, he's okay, let him in.
Then there's Oliver Reed.
You must be joking, throw him out.
Right. Oh, I nearly forgot, there's the King's equerry with a dagger in his back.
What?
My knees. It was...
Oh, the equerry, he is dead. Oh, God.
Assassinated by the French.
Then this is how Louis the Dauphin answers my plea for peace.
The Dauphin is a shower, my lord.
I read the colour supplements too, Gloucester, you know.
What's to be done in consequence, sire?
Hear me all and let this quote go down on legal document, lest Nigel Rees purloin it for himself. Where there is peace, I am for peace. But where there is treachery, I am for war! Go now, my loyal nobles, and assemble an army of my bravest subjects. Betimes we invade the French!
Sire, the men are mustered in Portsmouth.
And I hear the women are pretty hot down there as well.
My king, methinks this war will be won on cannonballs. What say you?
Leave that line with me and I'll try and think of a joke later.
If you care to sign this order, sire, I can supply all the cannonballs.
Meanwhile, across the channel and unaware of this late turn of events, Louis the Dauphin was relaxing in his bathing chamber.
She may be the answer to my prayer. F 44 with long blonde hair.
Your Majesty,
Comte de Patisserie. How dare you enter whilst the king bathes?
With respect, Majesty, but it is my wife you are bathing.
Oh.
Can I get out now?
Majesty, I have been in touch with the French.
Daniel, what are you barged in?
Grave news. Henri has amassed a new army to attack Foix.
Foix?
Yes, Foix. The end consonants are always silent unless followed by a vowel.
Oh, Bolo, I forgot. Now, you were saying...
They boast 10,000 archers.
Oh, we can deal with them.
And 20,000 dragoons.
We can deal with them.
And 300 Chelsea fans.
But, no, we are in big trouble. We need help, Patisserie.
Are you want a shepherd?
No, we do not. Now, get out of here.
Poisson, Majesty, there may still be a way to watch the English.
Yes, c'est Patisserie.
Ah, well, the English are obsessed with fine speeches, mon dauphin. Uh-huh. And without a rallying speech from the king, they become hopeless and demoralized in battle.
Oui, continue.
Henri has this day sent a proclamation to all four corners of England. Whoever writes him the finest Agincourt speech will win the hand of his fair daughter. He is a clever man.
But Henri has no daughter.
Yes, he's a con man as well. But I have a plan, Dauphin. If we can steal this speech before he learns it, come for my drift.
All over England, diligent scribes were writing. Would the king buy their work, or would it end up on that great scrap heap of rejects, the Grumbleweed Show? But among these unknown scribes was one destined to pen no less than 37 plays, 58 poems, scores of sonnets, and countless soliloquies. His name was Arthur Jones, and he's still an unknown scribe. But another, more talented, lived in the picturesque hamlet of Stratford-upon-Avon.
Out jam sport.
William.
Yes, ma'am.
Don't squeeze your blackheads at the table. There's a good boy. Here, what are you writing anyway?
A rousing speech for the king. Here, tell me what you think of me so far. Amsterdam. Clubs. Windmills. Well,
it's all double dutch to me, dear, but...
Meanwhile, the largest invasion force ever seen since the Sun printed a wrong bingo number assembled in Portsmouth. The troops were enjoying their last night in Blighty, and the pubs were fuller than Claire Rayner's bra.
Hey, Tom, I hope you're not sure.
Southern beer tastes like bloody vinegar.
Well, it is vinegar, man. You're drinking out the pickled onion jar.
Hello, big boy.
What are you would like?
Fancy satisfying your innermost empty pangs of desire.
Why, don't tell me they sell peace pudding there as well, man.
D'accord, my strong, handsome soldier boy. Won't you tell us, sweet, innocent little girl, where the king keeps his Agincourt speech, eh?
Hang on, canny lass. Careless talk cost lives. Why, for all I know, you might be a French spy or something.
Moi?
No, lass, you'll get naught from me, not for £1,000,000.
Lend-leur the large peace pudding for my friend here.
He keeps it in a box under his bed.
Merci.
But you'll not find it there yet, bonny lass.
Pardon?
The king's not pipped his speech yet. He's judging the finalists tomorrow.
You mean I've popped up too early in the storyline plot structure?
Aye, lass.
Well, coco vin, I shall return on page 19. Au revoir.
Hey, lass, what about our peace pudding?
Hello and welcome to the Tower Ballroom for this, the grand final of King Henry's Agincourt speech contest. Yes, a record entry of 5,000 has been whittled down to just 4. Now, who will win? Well, Ladbrokes has studied the speeches, and after assessing for style, substance, and quality, they go 5-1, Dame Barbara of Cartland, 3-1, William Shakespeare, 6-4, Kenneth of Rockingham, but the clear favorite at even money is still Red Rum. Hello, a bit of commotion backstage there.
Terry?
Julia Morley. Julia, what's happened?
Sorry, Terry, I've had to disqualify Red Rum from the contest because he broke the rules.
Broke the rules?
Yes, he's better looking than me.
Well,
It's down to just three finalists, then. So let's hear the first speech, and it's Kenneth of Rockingham on the rostrum.
He turned out nice again.
Foot of our stairs. There was a young lady from Nantucket whose boyfriend was...
Yes, well, I think we all get the gist of that one, Kenneth. Thank you. And now, Dame Barbara of Cotland.
A soliloquy. There in the meadow the chestnut stands, with its arms outstretched, and its conkers in its hands.
Thank you, Dame Barbara. Nice one. And finally, William... what's his name?
Shakespeare, William Shakespeare. Oh, right. Actor, writer, and impressionist. Right, here we go then. What's he that wishes so? My cousin Westmoreland? No, my fair cousin. If we are marked to die, we are now to do our country loss. And if to live, the fewer men the better. And if they even now abed shall think themselves accursed they were not here. And hold their manhood's cheap whilst any speech that fought with us upon St. Crispin's Day.
Is that all right?
By golly, the man's a veritable Robert of Davros, he is.
What thinkest thou then, sire?
Why, this choice is plain to any fool or Daily Star reader, my dear Archbishop.
I agree, sire.
Good. Can we hear the Cartland speech again, please?
Sire, whilst I own the Cartland is impressive of brevity, surely the effort of the young bard is the more rousing speech.
Which one was that, then? Oh, yes, the long one. Alas, I fear its learning would take a month of Sundays.
Well, if it can be learned, sire.
Enough. I just proclaim Cartman the winner.
Sire, I beg thee...
Hold thy tongue, Archbishop. Five lines has he uttered so far, and not one joke or decent feed line therein. Any more of this serious dialogue, and I'll have your head.
But sire, don't you see...
Yes?
My wife's gone to the West Indies.
That's better, my friend. Now, Eric, secure the Cartman speech in my box. On the morrow, it sails with me to France! France, where the bread is designed to fit into their mouth sideways. And the pavement cafe chatter is punctuated with that familiar sound.
Yeah, how much?
Don't make a scene, Dad.
50 francs for 2 coffees and a croissant, Mother. In England, we could get a 4-course meal in an Angus steak bar for that. Aye, and still have enough cheese to pay our medical expenses.
Please, let's get back to the hotel, Dad. I want to have another go on that bidet thing.
Oh, is that all you can think about? Washing your hair?
After landing at Calais, the mighty English army marched inland. The normal tranquility of the countryside shattered by the unmistakable chink, chink, chink of duty-free bottles in plastic bags. A day's yomping over, Henry decided to camp in a field, which put the wind up a few sheep, I can tell you. After supper, tactics were argued and discussed.
Sire, if I may make a point, but would it not be better to do the Louvre on Friday and visit Montmartre the following day?
Which would leave the men half a day for browsing round the shops.
Of course, my dear soul.
It's so simple, it's brilliant. Well done. What's this?
Yes, sir. 3 French spies, my lord. I caught them over near your tent. But what other got away, like?
No matter. You've done well, soldier, and you shall be rewarded. Kneel.
Yes, sir.
Now, if you look in the oven, you'll find a nice piece of pudding. Now, take it and be gone.
Thank you, sir.
Now, who are you three that creep about in dead of night?
I am Philippe of Burgundy.
A Burgundy boy, eh?
And I am Pierre of Cherbourg.
A Cherbourg boy, eh?
And I am Jacques of Nancy, and you'll be very careful.
Silence! Guards, clap these men into the stockade!
Come on, hey,
Sire!
Yes, boy?
a dispatch arrived for Parliament, sire.
That boy's growing up. There's no doubt about it. Let me see.
Now, what unfolds, sire?
Grave news, gentlemen. This day there has been a serious clash in the House of Commons.
Clash?
Yes, Norman St. John Stevens was wearing brown shoes with a red frock.
Return!
Yes. My lords, we must to bed, to sleep, to dream dreams of victory and Sheena Easton in leather boots.
But sleep did not come easy for the king. He tossed and turned restlessly, thinking of his troops. When you've got the troops, you just cannot find a comfortable position. Suddenly he became aware of another presence in the tent. Someone was fiddling about with his box. Yes, these cricket groupies are a damn nuisance.
What? What's this dark shadow that invades my boudoir?
Oh. Fear not, my lord. I am Sibylline, the soothsayer, predictions, prophecies, diviner of omens, and racing correspondent for the psychic news.
What brings a witch to my camp?
I came on a broomstick.
Ah, Danair, eh?
Yes, I can.
Can you foretell the future?
I just told you, yes, I can.
Then predict me a prediction, my hunchbacked old hag. How fare my army on the morrow?
I will predict, sire, but first I must shuffle my tarot.
What?
I just don't have the figure for this cross your heart bra. Yeah, that's better. Oh, that's much better. Now, I see a picture, yet the picture is unclear. It is a very fuzzy picture.
Look, will you put Eddie Shaw's newspaper down and get on with it?
I see a great battle and a magnificent victory for a mighty king.
Which king? Which king?
The king whose natural talents know no bounds.
Moon River, wider than a mile.
The victory is for thee, sire.
You have done well, old hag. With this prediction, I can now sleep well.
A potion, sire. I have prepared thee a potion which guarantees a restful slumber.
Horlicks.
No, it's true, I tell you. Now drink and sleep, drink and sleep, drink
and sleep. Oh, Sheena Easton.
Oh, what a naive Wally this king is. Now, where's that speech?
In the old-fashioned way.
Well, excuse me interrupting you.
Oh,
Dauphin.
Juliet, are we on page 19 already?
Yes. Oui, Dauphin, the deed is done. I have stolen Henri's Agincourt speech.
Formidable! You shall be rewarded with the highest honor I can bestow.
Oh, not on the top of the wardrobe again, Dauphin.
Friday the 25th of October, 1415, was a day not unlike that of an English summer. It was chucking it down. Meanwhile, in Henry's tent, enter Salisbury.
Are you well equipped and confident, sire?
I am.
Then the men are at once assembled to hear your speech.
Ah, yes, my speech. I'll just get it from... Salisbury, my speech, it's gone. What sayest thou, Lord Charlton of Heston?
Oh, my God.
I'll smack him in the colbys, I swear it.
Sir, it must have been stolen by a deceitful enemy.
Who'd have thought Bob Monkhouse was French?
My liege, the men are restless for your words.
Then they must wait the next series of Bob's Full House, mustn't they? Oh, whoa, a speech, my kingdom for a speech.
Ah, you want a shepherd?
Not you again, Bob. Oh.
Sire, remember the young bard of Eden?
Aye, what, sir?
For seeing this catastrophe, my liege, I took the opportunity of writing his speech on the back of your shield, see?
Yes. A crib shield, very excellent, right. My Archbishop, thou hast this day plucked England and Harry from the eyebrows of defeat. And for this, you shall have new lead flashing for the scouts. Yes. And so on this cold and waterlogged field, the mighty armies faced each other. The English solid behind the king, the French resolute behind the Dauphin, and the Italians shaking behind the settee.
Yonder is their line, sire.
I see it, cousin. And a formidable force of French foes we face.
Aye, but we are roused by your oratory, sire.
What of my cousin York?
He supports the flank, sire.
And Exeter?
He signals ready, sire.
And Middlesex?
All out for 85. And they've been forced to follow up.
You sure?
Yes, I counted them all out, and I counted them all back in again.
Are the archers ready?
We be as ready as we are.
Very well, we are set to our task. Banners, advance! Ah, the demons have resorted to chemical warfare.
You mean?
Yes, they've been eating garlic. Here's one for Richard Kleiderman, you devil.
Henry.
Fiona, I told you never to bother me at work.
But there's news from our American allies.
What news?
They'll be here in 3 years.
They need not them, for victory is nigh. Once more into the breach, dear friend.
Hey, that is a nice line. Can I use it?
Oh, don't tell me Jim Davidson's a Frenchman, too.
Drink up, Salisbury. We have much to sup this night.
They are fine victory, my friend.
God smiled on us this day.
A toast. A toast to our good King Harry.
Desist.
What?
My liege, grieved on such a triumph?
I have news that breaks my heart, dear friends. Succor thy victory well, for soon our green and pleasant England will tarnish under a ravaging plague, set to invade, aye, the very center of this city we hold so dear.
You mean?
Yes, we've drawn Scotland at home in the semis. Oh, I'm sick as a parrot.
Oh, no!
Yes!
To Hudwinks with Roy Hart, Chris Evitz, Denise Coffey, Fred Harris, and David Goodison, all of whom supplied their own cod pieces. The script was written with goose quills, and if anyone wants to buy a bald goose, they can contact our producer, Jonathan James Moore.